This is a Collider.com audio interview.
How excited were you when you heard for the first time that Nolan and Goyer had a take on Superman and that they were serious about making it?
I was very, very excited because I think they're both immensely talented guys and the collaboration's been very successful, so of course I was excited. At that point in time, I wasn't really involved with it, quite frankly. I got invited into the process later, once there was a script. So, at that point, we knew that there was going to be the situation of having to do both films at the same time, make both films at the same time. And so then we just sort of, because I was invited, you know, I was going to be doing Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah.
And then when Man of Steel, it turned out that Man of Steel was going to have this overlapping production period. Then we just sort of had to figure out how we were going to handle both movies at the same time. And I got pulled into the process, and I was really happy to be asked in.
And what has been your time balance?
I've definitely been spending more time on Man of Steel.
And why is that?
Because I'm not married to Chris Nolan.
We heard that Chris has been surprisingly involved in, you know, David was telling us that he's been talking with him almost every day. Has that been your interaction with him as well, or has it been mostly Chris talking with David?
I'd say Chris's real main focus, and we always knew this was going to be this way, and even more so once I came on board, because we knew of the overlapping productions, he was going to focus really on the story and the script and those issues. Emma would be involved with Chris and myself and all of us in terms of casting somewhat. We did all that, all the big parts were more or less cast before the Dark Knight started to shoot. Dark Knight Rises started to shoot. But the production issues have been more me communicating with Emma, obviously collaborating with Debbie, but in terms of the Nolan contingent, I've been spending more time talking with Emma about that. Every so often, Chris gets updated, gets involved. We really ideally would like to make sure that there's, an ongoing collaboration on both films.
But I asked David earlier that, like, they're wondering what if they have a runtime lock, or, like, is this going to be like, but no, I mean, obviously you don't know that yet, but is this being pictured as, like, a really big kind of large scope, like 2.5 hour kind of adventure, like the Batman movies?
We certainly want the length of the film to be commensurate with what we feel the scale of the film demands it to be.
I'm curious, can you talk a little bit about why you chose to film here, why Chicago is Metropolis, and Vancouver?
We looked at a number of different... First of all, we felt that Superman, Man of Steel... What is it called? Man of Steel, because that's the right name for it. Man of Steel needed to have a real Americana sensibility, at least if we were going to deal with any of the part of the story that had what shaped Clark. And we wanted to make sure that we shot in a place that gave us that sense of Americana and small town. You know, Smallville has always been a small town. And we needed to find that kind of a place. We also needed to find a place that was extremely film-friendly, ideally would give us a rebate of some sort. You know, all the factors that go into picking a location. And you know, and you know, I would say one of the most critical aspects of, you know, is finding a community that's going to let you do what the great people in Plano did, which is let us take over the center of their town and turn it into our town, and be happy that they were doing it. And so, you know, Plano hit every one of those marks. When you think about it, and other places didn't. So that's what brought us into Illinois. And, you know, I've made two other films in Chicago. Chicago has been just an amazing film-friendly place. And we felt that there was, once we decided that we would be in Illinois, where we thought about where we were going to get another big city look, which we had to have. We had to have a place that would be metropolis. Chicago just seemed a natural fit. Had previous great experience shooting here. Metropolis, I mean, Chicago is a, it's just got a great skyline that can be altered to fit what we want metropolis to look like. And it's 45 minutes away, an hour away.
Do you know the population here, by any chance, of Plano?
Yes. The district is about 10,000 people. The town is about 4,000 to 5,000 people.
And then finally, Vancouver. The Snyders have had really a lot of success shooting films in Vancouver. They really also like the crews there. They think they're really great. And we did need a place where, a city where the we could get some weather looks that was around a filmmaking center, as opposed to, like, just say, a place like Los Angeles, although it's tough to shoot in Los Angeles these days, or down in Louisiana, where there is a lot of shooting, but you don't get a lot of different weather looks. We wanted to have a number of different weather looks, and Vancouver afforded that. And also, again, it's a film-friendly city. You get a number of different potential rebates, and, you know, it doesn't really matter what size budget you're working with. All of those soft money issues become increasingly more and more important.
Now, were there any sort of considerations about what you were going to have to do to make Chicago more metropolis-y and less Gotham City, having done sort of having had Chicago already play in the Batman franchise?
No, not really, because you know, you've had Chicago be Gotham, but you've also had Chicago be Chicago in Transformers, and you know, Chicago is such a great city because it's got so many different, brilliantly architecturally looking buildings, and you can really modify that city. I mean, if you really look at the Batman movies and what was done to make Chicago look like Gotham, and then you look at Transformers, those cities do not look anything at all like. And we felt that we could do the same thing.
You're talking about, like, is most of the destruction in this movie, is it here, or are you guys kind of be blowing up crap in Chicago and Vancouver as well?
That's an 810.
Are you calling an 810 crap, seriously? you know, let's just say, I think Debbie answered it, we've got a really great film that's, we think's got a great, great story, and we've got a lot of drama and a lot of action, and the action is all the way through the film wherever it takes place.
I'm curious about Krypton, and how much are you guys going to build of Krypton practically up in Vancouver, or is Krypton going to be all green screen?
We thought about going there.
the rebates were right for that.
Right.
It was a little cost prohibitive. You know, we're doing all of it in every possible way that you can conceive of it.
So I mean, you're definitely shooting some of Krypton, something in Vancouver, because I think that when you look at Green Lantern and Oa was basically all green screen, and I think that for a lot of us, there maybe wasn't that physicality on any part of the landscape that made you believe you were there. And that's
well, here's the thing, you know. We've said to you, and you just really, you know, we want the film to feel that it could be real. We really do. That's really important to us. We want the drama to play real. We want the characters' emotional choices to play real. So in everything that we've done, from the way that Zach is shooting the picture to the way we decided how to do our best to make sure that you're feeling like you're there, both in terms of the production design and in terms of the visual effects, in terms of the practical effects, we've really tried to do our best to deliver that real feeling in every aspect of it. And so we're really mindful of that thing. You know, I don't want to compare us to another movie. I don't want to say we're going to do it different than that. But our goal is to make things feel real. And we know that the more real elements we can figure out a way to put in there, like that craft that you saw on the barn, it's going to make you feel like, gee, you know, we're emotionally connected to the drama. We feel that's really important and we want to deliver that.
Well, you're coming along relatively soon after another Superman movie. How does that affect this production? What lessons do you take from that? Has it impacted this at all?
Well, you know, it impacted it only to the point that, you know, notwithstanding what David said, which is whether a lot of people understood Superman Returns as the homage that it was to the Donner Pictures or didn't, it was an homage to those pictures. And, you know, I was a young man when those pictures came out, and those pictures were great. I was also, you know, an Action Comic fan when I was a young kid, and those comic books affected me. And, you know, Superman is, you know, he's the one. He's the first one. He's the one. He's the one everybody is always compared to. So we just felt that because that was that, and it so referenced the other movies, that the timing, however long the period had been, the timing was right enough to do this version of it.
Do you get any sense that you guys, you and the Nolans, have gotten the Batman franchise, taking it beyond anyone's expectations, especially after the last few that they did in the 90s? And this looks like a whole new take, and assuming that this is a hit, we know Dark Knight Rises is going to be another colossal hit. Is there any sense that if everyone sat in a room and Warner Brothers said to you guys, look, can you do this for The Flash? Can you help us get Green Lantern back on track? Overseeing, like the Nolans are doing now with this, any sense that something like that could happen, that they could then develop these other DC characters and tie it all together somewhere down the line?
You know, here's the thing. I've worked with Chris. You know, I've had the great pleasure of being able to work with him for, I don't know, 9 years now. And he always does things one picture at a time. He just doesn't think about it. People ask him those kinds of questions, but he won't focus on answers to those kinds of questions, because then he's not focusing. Once he does that, if he answers in the affirmative, okay, then by definition, he's going to have to be thinking about that while he's doing this. And I don't think he wants to do that. I've never noticed him to want to do that. Every time people have asked him that question, whether it's been, you know, really anybody, just a casual question to maybe a more pointed question, maybe to a press question, he just won't engage.
What about you?
Look, you know, I think that I'm a pretty great producer, but the vision behind Batman is Chris Nolan. You know, I'm there to do my best to help execute that vision, and I think I do a really good job, but the vision is Chris Nolan.
Is this more of a shared vision?
Well, I think that, you know, Goyer and Chris, you know, shaped the idea of the story. It was definitely David's original idea of a story. He came to Chris with it. So it's certainly a shared vision from that standpoint. But once again, that while that vision stayed constant to a certain degree, it was then hugely informed by Zach, right? And so my job is to help that redefined vision that has those three visionaries making it to deliver that, to help that vision be delivered. That's what I do.
Do you have a sense, though, that when Chris finishes on the Dark Knight movie, then there's still, you know, that 9 months, 10 months before this is released, that he's going to sort of focus more intently on this, sort of in post-production and whatnot?
It is our desire that this creative team that we have of, you know, Chris, Zach, David, myself, Emma, Debbie, that we all are part of the process of bringing Superman to the finish line.
With Dark Knight Rises, something that's very striking is the amount of IMAX footage you're going to be doing on it. Was there ever any discussion about doing anything IMAX on Superman, on Man of Steel?
Not really. You know, the most of our conversation went around the whole 3D and how we were going to do the 3D. Would we do native 3D or would we do the conversion process? And when we landed, and then when we got the good fortune to be able to have this additional post-production time, that sort of helped us define exactly how we were going to execute the 3D, and then that's still the plan right now. But that's really all the conversation was about that.
The industry is changing, as you know, as far as the delineation between pre-production, production, and post, and so much of it is now worked out in pre-production and production in terms of the world building and all of that. How is that working on this film?
I would say that this film is definitely an example of that. You know, we certainly went into the shooting of the film with a script that we all felt was essentially, not that you don't do tweaks and whatever as you go through the process of making the movie, you know, because the actors bring so much and you realize you might need actually a little bit less of this and a little bit more of that, and the same thing as you're doing the action. So the script was really essentially locked before we started to shoot. You know, while he hasn't, you know, while he didn't do 100% of the storyboards before we started to shoot, he did, you know, the vast majority. Zach storyboards is all of, I'm sure Debbie mentioned to you and talked today, he storyboards everything, you know, not just the action, he storyboards everything. It's how he gets to focus his mind's eye on what it is that he wants out of each scene. And so this is really a film that did have quite a lot worked out before we started shooting.
You guys have an incredible cast. You know, was there anybody that you guys went after that you couldn't get? Because it seems like you just aligned a pretty stellar group.
We considered ourselves to be amazingly fortunate. I have to say, the cast is great. It's really amazing. It's amazing when we talk about the fact that, you know, and they're fantastic in the film.
How did you talk Russell Crowe and Kevin Costner into coming on board?
I think a lot of it actually wasn't that hard. Actually, you know, the things that we felt. First of all, Zach really, really, really knows the movie he wants to make. So he is extremely articulate about being able to tell an actor, whether it's before or after they've read the script, what he's trying to deliver. And that gives that actor a tremendous amount of confidence that they're working with a guy who knows exactly what he's doing. And the script is just really, really good. You know, I've never met anybody who has looked at it who hasn't been kind of really surprised about how good it is.
From your point of view, how hard was the search that led to Henry? How hard did it feel to do?
We really did look at, you know, we looked at a lot of different possibilities and read many of them. But the guy who kept coming back, not that he was such a hard choice ultimately, he was always on our short list. And of course, you know, he had a history with a previous version. I don't know if you guys know that. You guys do, right? So, and he just looked like he could do it even more so now when we wanted the guy to be older. So he was always there on the short list, and you know, and then when we tested him, he was great. He was great.
Does the design for the ship that Baby Kal-El came to Earth in that we saw earlier, based on that design, does that sort of inform what the look of structures, for instance, in Krypton, in that design? And you probably will have to tell me that you can't tell me, but I do have to ask, is the Fortress of Solitude at all in the film?
You know, you answered your question.
Okay, and that we
only have
time for one more question, and then I got to take you to lunch so we can talk to Henry.
I'd like to ask a Dark Knight Rises question. It basically says in the trailer, you know, this is the epic conclusion of the Dark Knight Rises. Talk a little bit about, for you, what, you know, looking on this whole thing, it's a worldwide phenomenon. You sort of sad to see it ending. Talk about, you know, the mixed feelings on that, and also what are your thoughts on the final installment? I mean, you know, when you first heard the story of what they were going to do, what was your initial take?
You know, first of all, I was ecstatic that Chris agreed to finish a trilogy. You know, that was by no means a foregone conclusion. That's what I was saying earlier. You know, Chris just never would talk about whether or not he would do a third until he finished the second. And then for a really long time, he wouldn't even really talk about that because he was totally focused on wanting to finish Inception and see if he could get that made. Which, you know, obviously hindsight goes, gee, who wouldn't have made that movie? But I can assure you, it wasn't a slam dunk when he presented that script with the budget that it was at, even to the studio that made The Dark Knight, okay? It was an ambitious project, which, just think about reading that script, that mind-bending script, at a really, really, really significant budget, right? We all know it was 9 digits, right? So Chris was really focused on that, and he really needed to have conversations with David for them to come up with what that third story would be. So I didn't know. I hoped it would happen. I was actually a fan in that respect. And so when they called up and said, hey, we think we've got something, let's want to come over and talk about it, I was ecstatic. And then when I heard it, I was even more ecstatic because I just felt that, you know, it was the right way to go out, you know. And, you know, it's important to go out the right way, to make the last one, you know, something that people are going to remember. So I hope it'll be that. It feels like it.
If I could just do a follow-up, like what struck me about the film is that there's a huge percentage being shot in IMAX. What do you think the final number might be as far as like the percentage of the film being in IMAX, and how much is a producer, how much does that add to the bottom line?
You know, I think you'd be surprised at how efficient Chris shoots. You know, he just is a very, very efficient guy, ultimately. And, you know, while you might be spending a lot of money on IMAX, he shoots so much real that the visual effect number by comparison on a movie of that size is really much smaller. So, and yet you get this huge scope by virtue of the fact that even when it gets, you know, the IMAX is what it is, of course, but even when it goes down into 35, you still feel it in the material. So it's that trade-off just makes it not a big deal.
And as far as the final percentage, any guesses?
I honestly don't know, but, you know, certainly more than The Dark Knight, you know. He's using it wherever he can that it makes sense, that he thinks it's going to add value. He definitely is doing that.
Thank you very much.
Sure, thank you. Hey guys, so thanks for coming, and thanks for understanding.